Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 34 degrees and overcast. Today is Monday, March 26, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A regional group advising the Federal Subsistence Board says it should wait before acting on a petition to change fishery management near Angoon. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from the board meeting in Juneau.
The Southeast Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council says it's too early to turn state management of sockeye fisheries over to the federal government. Bertram Adams, senior of Yakutat, chairs the council.
We found that it'd be very difficult to extend extraterritorial jurisdiction, in areas that Angoon is concerned about, because it was not only going to affect those areas that Angoon is concerned about, but other areas as well, such as Cake or Huna.
Instead, the council recommended waiting 3 years to see if government officials, fishermen's groups, and Angoon leaders can find alternative solutions. The proposal came from Kootsnuwu, Angoon's village native corporation. It asked the statewide subsistence board to back a federal takeover of Northern Chatham Strait fisheries. The corporation and village leaders said that would increase subsistence sockeye salmon harvests. That's because the federal government gives customary and traditional fishing a higher priority. But Adams says the proposal might not allow that to happen.
We also found the secretaries of Interior and Agriculture does not have the authority to manage the resources. All they can do is shut things down.
The regional advisory group's opinion strongly influences the statewide subsistence board. That panel will send its recommendations to the federal Interior and Agriculture departments, but it will not be made public. Kootsnuwu officials were disappointed with the advisory group's decision. Board Chairman Floyd Kukesh, also an advisory council member, said its recommendation is incomplete.
One of the things we really have been struggling with is having the state and the federal governments working together, and that's what we're looking forward to seeing happen. And we're doing this not just to create friction, but to work on making it better for the subsistence user and for Angoon.
The advisory council did recommend re-examining management plans for the area's seine fishery and the nearby Hidden Falls hatchery, and it called for studies and regulatory changes to increase Angoon sockeye catch. Representatives of government agencies and fishing groups suggested a variety of solutions at the meeting. Kukesh worries whether they will follow through.
It sounded very sincere. We seem to have had some good people out there, but the one thing that we wanted the most was to get it in writing. We seem to be a little lacking because once this meeting's over, people are going to kind of go away, and we're hoping we can maintain the momentum where we can keep them there.
Tlingit Haida Central Council and other tribal governments testified in favor of Kootsnuwu's extraterritorial jurisdiction petition. Sea Alaska General Counsel Jaylene Arujo, who is from Angoon, said the regional native corporation backs the plan. She said the federal government has a better policy on subsistence, but doesn't always use it.
The problem that we've had and continue to have is while it's a federally recognized right, it's not always a federally protected right. We have the federal agencies, and I speak with all due respect, that are too quick to delegate or give up jurisdiction to the state. Federal agencies often simply adopt the state bag limits and harvest limits without making their own determinations and considerations.
Others talked about how subsistence sockeyes fit into Southeast Native culture. Alfred McKinley Sr., who's fished since 1944, said those catching the sockeyes share with those who can't.
In Tlingit, they say, ka'ich toshi, ka'ich toshi. You help each other. That's how our people are.
Commercial fishermen, hatchery, and industry groups testified against the petition, calling it overkill. Petersburg's Jeremy Jensen seines in Chatham Strait.
I think before we get to the point where we're eliminating whole areas for fishing, we need more research, more data, and a better understanding of what's happening.
Others said part of the problem is a key spawning route with a difficult waterfall. They suggested blasting or building a fish ladder below Kanalku Lake, where Angoon residents harvest sockeyes. Bob Thorstenson is with the Southeast Alaska Seiners Association.
Can't we fix the frigging falls first? Let's get the fish in the lake and worry about who owns it next.
If recent history holds, federal officials will make their decision on the petition within 4 to 6 weeks. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
You can find a video about subsistence in Angoon with this report on our website, kcaw.org. You can also find petition documents and past stories on the issue. The bones of a killer whale recovered from Kruzoff Island last year will soon be on display at the Sitka Sound Science Center. Volunteers and scientists spent last week rearticulating the orca skeleton. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Last year, at this time, Shannon Atkinson was standing on a beach some 10 miles west of Sitka with a team of scientists and volunteers. They were working against a rising tide to recover the bones of a young killer whale that had washed up dead just a few weeks before. She explained then that the skeleton would be transported back to Sitka.
At which point we'll freeze it, and then we'll take the rest of the meat off. But the more we can get off now, the less we have to carry. So it's actually out of convenience that we're doing this.
Atkinson is a professor in the School of Fisheries and Ocean Science for the University of Alaska. And today, she's still standing near those bones.
4 seems a little low and a little poking out, and 5 seems just about right at the top, but then a little too far in down here.
But a year later, the smell of rotting whale meat has been replaced by the smell of glue. The dirty, wet bones are now pristine and dry. And instead of lying in the rapidly flooding intertidal zone of Kruzoff Island, the skeleton's components are lined up on tables inside the Sitka Sound Science Center.
So this is the first rib bone, which is also his clavicle. And if you look, there is a bony growth coming out here. And this had to have happened in utero. This is not the result of a broken bone.
As the team has worked with the bones over the last year, they've noticed irregularities just like that. Those help tell the whale's story. One of the biggest surprises was the sternum, which has made it difficult to put the rib cage back together.
So part of our challenge is to try and keep it lined up, knowing that this whale was very asymmetrical in his sternum. And part of the challenge is because he has a broken sternum just on this one side here.
Atkinson says the broken sternum is likely the result of a fight with another animal, but probably wasn't the cause of death. Scientists believe that was the result of an infection in the whale's abdominal cavity. Keeping the rib cage lined up at the moment is partly the duty of Elena Avery, an AmeriCorps volunteer who's been working with the bones for months. Avery has a biology background, but today her work sort of entails physics. She's standing underneath the partially assembled skeleton. One of her eyes is closed, and she's staring at 2 pieces of twine that are weighted down and hanging off the backbone.
So I am looking down those 2 plumb lines, making sure that I only see one, so I know they're in line, and that the sternum is in line with those 2 strings.
So you're not wincing or anything?
No, I'm not in pain, though I might after standing here for another however long it takes.
Luckily for her, they're moving quickly. 3 days into the job, the backbone and several of the ribs are already reassembled. And just 1 week ago, all of the bones were being photographed and scanned for inclusion in a digital library. And that is the other component of this story. If you're in Sitka, you'll be able to visit the skeleton in person, but eventually, you'll be able to see it anywhere you can get an internet connection. Robert Schlater is holding up one of the whale's caudal vertebrae. That's one of the bones that makes up the tail. He gives it a quick once-over with a toothbrush and positions it on a piece of foam in front of a rectangular scanner that's slightly larger than a computer tower. Schlater says the data gathered here through these 3-dimensional scans and through standard photography will become part of a project called VZAP. That stands for the Virtual Zoarchaeology of the Arctic Project,
which is a online 3-dimensional and 2-dimensional osteological comparative collection for fish, birds, and mammals for the northern latitudes.
In other words, a visual database of bones from animals across the entire Arctic.
We've got things ranging from sea mammals all the way to fish with birds thrown in. And so you can actually look at different types of animals. You can look at the difference between a shrew femur and a fox femur and a squirrel femur, because they're all there.
That's really handy for scientists in the field who need to figure out what they're looking at.
And what we found out was that there are a lot of people who are interested in looking at bones, not just archaeologists, not just faunal analysts, that you've got kids up in little tiny villages up in northern Alaska, in this case specifically Barrow, that are using our online comparative collection every day, every week.
When the orca from Kruzoff Island finally appears in the collection, it will be from the combination of millions of pieces of data. Photographs of each bone will be combined with tiny little points detected by the laser scanner. It will take a few weeks to get it all together, but when it's done, the whale, now called Kruzoff, will be one more resource for scientists, students, and you. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The team finished its work on Friday, and the whale skeleton will be officially unveiled sometime later this spring. You can see pictures from throughout the process by visiting our website, kcaw.org. Once there, you can also link to the VZAP project's website in Idaho. A North Pole legislator wants to get rid of state safety regulations for food sold by Alaska producers directly to consumers. The goal of Republican Tammy Wilson is to assist the growth of Alaska's local food industry and farmers markets. Alaska health officials testified against the bill at a committee hearing last week. The measure would remove safety regulations for traditional farmers market fare, but also for seafood, shellfish, poultry, meat, and dairy products. The Department of Environmental Conservation has no regulations for fruits and vegetables, syrup, honey, or jam, but does regulate processed and raw food that have high potential for dangerous bacteria. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for cloudy, chance of rain and snow this morning, highs around 42. This is KCAW in Sitka.